comics,
movies,
music,
video games,
technology,
Blu-ray,
television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Previously on Out Now with Aaron and Abe.
Woo! Great work out, Aaron. Hey, you want something to drink? I've got some soda, OJ, Sunny D, and some purple stuff.
What is purple stuff? Why are you saying these things? What's happening? We didn't even work out. What are you doing?
Dude, it's a workout watching Iron Man 3, obviously. I don't know what you're talking
about. We're talking about Gatsby this week, Abe.
Wait a minute. So we didn't just fly around in iron suits?
I think Baz Luhrmann's 3D is getting into your head.
I am Don Cheadle, the Asian Don Cheadle.
That's an interesting character choice to model yourself after, but we're talking about DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire as, you know,
Spider-Man
20s layabouts.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I guess that's all right, but still, you want some purple stuff or not?
Sure, old sport.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Is everybody feeling all right? Is everybody feeling all right?
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is once again not here. Abe has had a rough schedule these past weeks, so it's getting hard to get him on these Sunday records. But hopefully, as I did last week, we'll be able to have him back at the end of the show and talk all the spoilers you want to hear in The Great Gatsby, the most unspoilerable novel you can probably talk about. Anyway, Out Now is regularly a film podcast with Abe and I normally discussing new movies weekly. We also bring a discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a callback to past films similar to the main film of the week, games, and other fun stuff. This is episode 103, a lot of syllables in there, 103 episodes, and this week we are talking about The Great Gatsby, the Baz Luhrmann version of the Scott Fitzgerald novel. Joining me to discuss The Great Gatsby, we have writer for the Gazette newspapers, currently awakening from a lavish party at the West Egg, Jonathan Van Dyke.
Heyo!
And from Film.com, the man who has literally written the book on film criticism, available on Amazon.com, a true old sport, Laramie Legal.
I can't top AO, but hi there.
Yeah, I just like to drop the mic early.
That was really good. Yeah.
You can leave. We're good. We got this.
Yes.
You like Gatsby? Good. Okay. See you. But yeah, good. Good to have you guys on here. We're gonna talk about some Gatsby, and yeah, that's the plan. But first, we have a few announcements. First things first, iTunes stuff. A lot of iTunes business. This past couple weeks has been very weird with the iTunes because the show that hosts our podcast, the HHW LOD Podcast Network, they completely remodeled the website, which caused all the iTunes feeds to drop out and go back to zero. Because of that, everyone that's listening to the show hopefully has resubscribed through iTunes or is listening through our Podomatic site, but if you want to resubscribe to the show via iTunes, you can do that now. We have a completely new feed. Not all the episodes are there. Most of the newest ones, like the past like 7 weeks or so. But hopefully all the other shows will be back on iTunes very soon, and everything will be back to normal. But for now, iTunes is up. These new episodes will be on there, and hopefully everyone is, you know, back listening to us again. iTunes reviews and ratings, we need those more than ever now because we have new feeds. We went back to ground to square one.
That is so mean.
It is.
You gotta be really mad about that.
I am quite mad about that. That's very annoying.
Because you worked so hard for all those
Yes,
readings.
that sucks quite a bit. But so far we got a few on there. We got about six reviews on there. It's very, very nice. Very happy to have that. But
what were you up to?
We were getting up to like a close 20. We never had too many iTunes reviews. But I would call
Fred iTunes and demand those back.
Fred iTunes and
who runs the iTunes empire? Yeah,
Johnny MciTunes store and Sammy Apple store. But we could use those iTunes reviews and ratings again just to get us back to. It wasn't even that many, but we don't have to get more of them. But yeah, it very much help out the show if we can get some iTunes reviews and ratings on there. So yeah, there's that. And I'm sorry for the inconvenience. I mean, Abe and I have been more frustrated than you guys. I guarantee it. But we're back up on iTunes, and it's, you know, we're here. It's actually easier now to post shows, though, I mean, from the site remodel. So things will be a little smoother on our end. Let's see. Let's get to another thing. Contest. Our 100th episode, we announced a banner contest. We have our Facebook and Twitter page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, and twitter.com/outnow_podcast. Say those faster. And there's banner photos on there. We asked our listeners and anyone, really, who, if anyone wants to submit a banner photo, we have a very cool prize. And the one that we think is the best that we want to put on our site will get that cool prize.
Is it a Bruce Banner doll?
It could be. But it's some Out Now swag. We got a pretty cool piece of Out Now swag and a number of Blu-rays. We got Life of Pi on Blu-ray.
I believe that's pronounced Life of P, by the way.
I keep it mispronounced. Abar is pronounced too. But we got some cool prizes in there. So that's open till the end of the month, that contest. We already have a few submissions, but keeping that one open for a while. And I'm going to announce a new contest right now because I got this fancy Star Trek Into Darkness poster, a big one, like a big full-size movie poster, but I don't want it. So I'm going to send it to somebody. All they have to do is email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com what their favorite Star Trek character is and why. I will limit this contest to people that live in the United States because who wants to ship a giant poster across the world? But that contest is open. Who is your favorite Star Trek character and why? Respond outnowpodcast@gmail.com or on our Facebook page, either way. And Abe and I will pick an answer from there. Let's see. One more thing here. I put a question on the old Facebook page, as I normally do. Favorite books you've read that have been turned into movies? And we got a number of responses. Tyler put The Langoliers, Stand By Me, and Of Mice and Men. It's an eclectic mix. Marcus put The Autobiography of Malcolm X. I wonder what movie that turned into. Roots and Mr. Popper's Penguins, of course. John, you're on this show. you put The Rules of Attraction. It's a solid pick.
It's interesting.
Dave H put Fight Club. That'd probably be my pick, actually. Daniel Key put No Country for Old Men. That's another solid. That's a very very direct adaptation from the Coen brothers, no less. Like, they really stuck to that book. But those are responses we got. I was like hearing from listeners, so thank you very much for your responses. Let's get into things. Let's get into Know Everybody, where each week we ask each other a few questions to try to set the tone for the podcast to better get to know everybody. And I'm going to start this one off. I'm going to ask John a question. John, what known artist would you like to see as the music supervisor for a film?
Gosh, let's see here. Well, those are way better than my questions are going to be. put me on a spot. I guess I'm trying to think who would be fun. I think it would be – well, actually, I don't know. It'd probably be like Skrillex right now, and he kind of already did that. So it's a terrible answer, but also a great plug for Spring Breakers if you haven't seen it.
And the upcoming Spring Breakers, too, still springing, right? So that'd be you. Your turn, John. You go.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, I guess I'll ask Laramie a question, and that will just be blockbusters are all about explosions, etc., but has it already happened, or what is? What do you think is going to be the best acting turn? One of these big movies, though, where somebody actually does something beyond just look pretty on the screen.
And we're talking like summer movies this year. Is that?
Yep.
That's my ballywick. All right, let's bring this up. That's a good question. It's definitely. I don't think we've seen it yet. Let's put it that way. Having seen Star Trek, I feel pretty good about saying it's not necessarily in there. I don't see anyone doing anything with Fast and Furious, although I'm a huge Vin Diesel.
Whoa!
Yeah, I'm a huge Vin Diesel fan. I mean, I don't think we can lie about that.
Remember the monologue he gives about his father in Fast Five?
Apparently you don't know Michelle Rodriguez is coming back just to win an Oscar.
It's a pretty serious situation. I'll tell you the one that has the most potential. I don't know that they'll pull it off, but if you looked for one performance that you're like, you know what? Let's keep an eye on that. It's the Man of Steel Superman performance by, what's his name?
Henry Cabs.
There you go. Because I think that's an iconic role that was kind of messed up last time. I don't think it was dude's fault last time, but Brandon Routh.
He was very Ken doll.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault. He was just given the script. But yeah, if you wanted to look for something that could be awardy or more dramatically interesting, I will go with Henry Cavill.
Well, even the supporting performances, you got, you know, you got your Costners who.
Yeah, like, I kind of assumed that he was just going to go supporting, be like,
Russell Crowe's, your Toby from West Wings.
No, I'm not doing that.
Okay.
Not doing that.
Not Jaden Smith in After Earth.
You know, I've gone back, because I always say After Earth too, I go, welcome to Earth. I've gone back to that actual line. He doesn't say Earth, he says Earth.
I know. It's,
I don't know where it came from.
It annoys me more than anyone, because I love Independence Day.
Yeah, he does say welcome to Earth, because I went back to like pull the clip, because I love Earth, welcome to Earth, but no, he says it correctly. So that's just everybody else. This one's actually trivia for you,
all
right, Mr. Aaron. It's a little different, but I think you'll have a good time with it.
I like a mix-up and know everybody.
What Leonardo DiCaprio film from 2000 is also James Cameron's nickname for his ex-wife, Catherine Bigelow?
2000.
Again, what Leo DiCaprio film from the year 2000 is also James Cameron's nickname for his former ex-wife, Catherine Bigelow? I guess he's still ex-wife. Can't really be former.
What was DiCaprio doing in 2000? Was he in the beach?
There you go.
Ding, ding, ding.
No. Subtle. It works, though.
The beach.
The beach. They had beach.
I love Point Break jokes.
As do I.
All right, Larrabee, I got a question right back at you.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on contemporary music and period films?
I really do like it. I will say I'm always swayed by it. It generally works for me if it's a good mix. I like... You know, like how they did in 42, how they, you know, used a lot of Jay-Z in that, too. I think if you're making a film for modern audiences, I don't mind using new music, even if the material itself is not new. I think it's a nice method. And it's, to me, it's superior than, like, throwing Celine Dion in Titanic or something, where you're just like, come on, what are we doing? Yeah. Where you're trying to bend modern music to,
It makes sense for me, too. Like, it's not like there was score back then going accompanying every scene, so what does it matter what period that music necessarily – I mean it fits. It fits for me, whether it be rock tracks for A Knight's Tale or, you know, the stylized nature of Baz Luhrmann's movie. Like
Yeah, and I guess, like, what's the point in staying, you know, true to the time? Like, what do you get for that? So I don't think F. Scott Fitzgerald is rising from his grave for that. So. I'll put a question to John. You ready for this?
I'm ready. Hit me.
Coming high and hard at you. What performance by Leo DiCaprio that he wasn't nominated for an Oscar for is your favorite? And I'll just take the suspense out. He was nominated for Blood Diamond, The Aviator, and Gilbert Grape. So what non-Oscar nominated performance is your favorite by Leo D?
Let's see here.
I have two answers for this.
Okay.
There's only one correct, but that's
fine. He wasn't nominated for The Departed. That's weird. I would have thought he was. I thought he was. Yeah. I'd probably say The Departed, if not the stereotypical Romeo and Juliet. But
it's Romeo plus Juliet, by the way.
Baz Luhrmann's Romeo plus Juliet. Baz Luhrmann's William Shakespeare's Romeo plus Juliet.
I heard Baz might be doing Hamlet with Leo coming up, so we'll see.
Oh, Baz. I think I would either go Gangs of New York or Revolutionary Road, which I like more than everyone else.
By the way, Departed, I think Matt Damon's better. But,
And Mark Wahlberg's better than them both.
True that. Martin Sheen, happy birthday to Emilio Estevez, by the way. How Martin Sheen is, he's pretty good in that one. I really like his Catch Me If You Can performance. I think he brings everything about Leo involved in that in terms of his charming, his earnest, and his DiCaprio nature. Also, Shutter Island. I think he's, despite the quality of that film, I think he's very good in that movie.
Oh, yeah, no, I like that. I think the quality of the film is sometimes underrated a little bit, even.
I think he does the same thing in Inception, and I love Inception, but I think he gives that same performance in Shutter Island a little more effectively. That's me, though. I don't know.
All right, I guess I'm going to complete the circle here and ask Aaron a question. I'm going to go this year, I guess, since we're in the throes of summer, we could try to limit to summer, but is there a movie that a leading man or lady you think is miscast and that you would like somebody else in that role leading that movie, and who would you like leading that movie?
Again, for this summer? That's where you're
Yeah.
And leading leading lady. Oh, cool.
I mean, unless you've got something more inventive, I would say leading person. Leading a moving.
Meryl Streep, Fast 6. Done.
That's my default answer for most roles. I thought she should have been Green Lantern. That movie would have been fun.
She should actually be the role of The Rock.
Let me think. Let's see, you could just not cast Ken Jeong in The Hangover. I think that's already a miscast.
No kidding. Cast him with air instead. Yeah.
Let's see, what else could... Well, I'm not a fan of Costner, so I'd probably take him out of Man of Steel. What else? What's coming out that could have different casting going on?
What about grown-ups not having Sandler or Chris Rock or any of them? Kevin James.
And who is going to laugh at getting chocolate wasted?
The same amount who's going to laugh now. No one.
Let's see. Okay. Because I just saw that like Al Pacino is supposed to be in Despicable Me too, and now he's not, and they replaced him with Benjamin Bratt. That seems like a giant downgrade, so I'd probably just recast that back as Al Pacino again.
I heard he had problems with the script.
There wasn't enough yelling. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you could go wild and have This Is the End, have all the actors play themselves, but like in different roles, like James Franco plays Danny McBride. Just mix all of those actors up.
That would be genius.
There's my answer.
Why hasn't anybody ever just remixed a movie? Like have it come out as normal and then a few weeks later have new people hop in.
All right. By the way, John, Anna Larrabee, I like your preamble to the know everybody questions. That makes it all the more entertaining for me. Not everyone just jumps straight to their question, but I like it. So, thank you. And that is how I prefer to play know everybody. Let's move on. Out Now Quickies. DM, each week on Out Now, we try to talk about one movie, but there's a lot of movies that always come out, and we intend to see lots of movies, so we want to have a little segment called Out Now Quickies where we talk about said movies. John, have you seen any other movies this week or recently?
I'm afraid that you guys are probably going to be best for this. Pain and Gain's the only thing I've seen of note recently.
And did you enjoy it, Barbecue Hand and all?
Pain and Gain's tough for me. I liked it as like almost a behind-the-scenes analyzing type of way. Is it still somewhat fun popcorn-y? Yes, but I would say I think about it and I'm intrigued more about it just because it's Michael Bay trying to like do an art movie or something, and that is entertaining to see the cogs in motion at an attempt at that.
All right, Laramie, any movies that you can talk about that you've seen recently?
Yeah, I'm sure I'm not allowed to talk about Star Trek. They'd probably murder me or something.
Yeah, I think, but they beam you out.
What else is it allowed to talk about? Older movies I saw?
Yeah, sure.
I watched Swingers again last night. That was, I get sucked in. Like I saw the first scene, and then I'm like, I'll just watch a couple minutes, and then all of a sudden it's like 3 hours have passed.
It's an easy watch. Like,
I'm like, damn it, you got me again, Vince Vaughn. You got me again.
Who's the big winner?
I am. I watched Swingers last night, and that was pretty good. I watched Pitch Perfect on a plane about a month ago, and I've been raving about that. I hadn't seen it in theaters, and if they cut out those throw up scenes, I think I'm on board for like an A for that film.
That, you know what, if they did, I'd probably be more on board with it too. I do think it goes on for a movie like that. It goes on way too long. I think like it goes on way too long without them changing their act, because it's just like we should change our act. I mean, no, we should.
Yeah, they beat that out of the head. They're like, hey, we shouldn't. You're like, oh, you're going to change your act.
Well, we've got to make it to regionals.
And as much as I like Rebel Wilson, she makes me laugh. She plays up that fat joke a lot in that movie.
To the point where you're like, what's going on with you?
I mean, you could be funny without doing that. But
let's talk about it.
Where's her Heat? Where's English Heat, the spin-off movie of The Heat, Melissa McCarthy starring Rebel Wilson?
Yeah.
Let's see. What did I do? I've seen – actually, I was at a Hero Complex Film Festival in L.A. last night, yesterday, and saw a few movies there that I already enjoy but continue to enjoy on the big screen. I saw The Mist, which I hadn't watched in a while, and I really like The Mist a lot. Solid horror feature. And then I saw Double Dose of Guillermo del Toro. I saw The Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth. With him talking in between, that's like a weird humble brag. He came and did a Q&A and I was there. But those are solid movies. And then after that, they played Maniac. This is a remake of a horror film from the 80s. It stars Elijah Wood now. It's produced and written by Alexandra Aja from High Tension fame and Piranha 3D, not 3DD, a movie that Larry and I talked about before and wish to never talk about again.
Did not love it.
Oh. But Maniac, the movie I could go either way on, but the filmmaking involved is quite ingenious, like, because it's very much from Elijah Wood's perspective the entire time he plays this maniac killer. He just kills innocent girls, and it's like, hey, you're doing that again. That's great for you. But the filmmaking and the soundtrack, very, very cool soundtrack, and just kind of the way the cameras move to kind of represent his point of view for the duration is very well done. It's almost worth seeing because of that, even though it's just, hey, I'm killing another girl. Hey, hey, I used to be in Flipper. But, yeah, that's... So, yeah, those are Out Now Quickies. Let's move on. Movie trailer talk. Each week we discuss some of the newest trailers and, you know, what we thought of them. And the first one up, we have Ender's Game. This is an adaptation of one of the more popular sci-fi books around by Orson Scott Card. And stars Asa Butterfield from Hugo, along with a host of others, Haley Steinfeld from True Grit. Who's the girl? Abigail Breslin? Is that right? Yeah. Abigail Breslin, A Little Bit of Sunshine, Harrison Ford, and Ben Kingsley filling in the adult factor. Viola Davis filling in the adult factor. Lots of big stars, big movie book adaptation, sci-fi, spaceships, aliens, what have you. Laramie, what did you think of the trailer for Ender's Game?
I thought it was a good sci-fi trailer for a sci-fi movie, but not at all an Ender's Game trailer. And I just say that as a massive fan of the book. I thought they've completely missed the point of the book, which was more the horror that comes from involving your youth in war. Whereas here they're like, we've got a badass little kid making war. So to me, they totally missed the point of the movie, or they've cut the trailer to be something the movie's not. Either one.
I would almost say that's more the, like, you had to sell that aspect of it more than the psychological turmoil of a child being thrust into this environment kind of thing.
Well, and they still have the what is it? I think it's Viola Davis is like, do you forgetting they're just a kid line? So yeah, it's
why does she say it just like Harrison Ford? Because that's how she talks to him, just like Harrison Ford.
It's a trap.
John, what did you think of the trailer?
I mean, it looks. I guess the trailer itself. At the beginning is kind of, I was just kind of like, but you know, by the end when they're like shooting some massive gun and ship gun or something, I mean, I think it got better as it goes along. But I don't, at this point, I have no idea on the source material. And without knowing source material and knowing how good that book is, probably by your standpoint, it didn't like overly excite me. You know, just kind of sci-fi in some ways is getting a little paid by numbers for me. And I was kind of like, oh, there's some ships doing fighting, you know, massive swarm of something. But then again, like I said, it kind of got better as it went on. So, you know, I'll keep an eye out still.
Yeah. I think I'm more in love with the idea that this finally happened than I am with the trailer. I'm just like, yay, there's an Ender's Game movie. It's finally happening. Because I also do love the book. I would say I agree with Laramie's points to an extent just because it's selling the big aspect of it rather than the, hey, this is what the book's about aspect. So I'll be curious to see how it's marketed down the line. For now, I'm just like, hey, all right, they got people in there that I like. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're all looking forward to a few more dubstep trailers.
I just need Ben Kingsley in makeup all year. Apparently, that's what I need to see.
Yeah, he got the full Mike Tyson treatment there.
he went full Tyson. That's what you call it now. He went full Tyson. Okay, Ender's Game arrives in theaters November 1st, 2013. Just. You know, that's when, in IMAX apparently, but not in 3D. So we'll see how that goes. Gavin Hood directed it, by the way.
Who I like. I like Gavin Hood.
I like Gavin Hood. I love Satsi. That's a
yeah,
solid
film. You would think with Satsi, he'd understand what Ender's Game is about, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'd like to think they're selling the spectacle aspect more, but yeah, that's, guy he directed Wolverine too. But, hopefully there's less studio interference on the own Ender's Game. But it is a small, it's Lionsgate or Summit or something. Summit, I think. So.
Summit, yeah.
Is Lionsgate even considered small anymore then?
They got a new logo that makes it look big. But
if anyway. They are large, they're a large piece of garbage.
Chilling words. But all right. The next trailer we have is The World's End. This is the new film from director Edgar Wright and star Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. This is the third film in the Cornetto trilogy. which includes Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, Cornetto being the ice cream treat that they have in each of those movies, and much easier to convey in England, I guess, according to the word Cornetto. But here we go. It's this one involves Simon Pegg and a bunch of his friends, including Nick Frost, Bilbo Baggins, what's his name, Martin Freeman, all these guys. They reunite, they try to go on an epic pub crawl, and something happens in this. Based on the trailer, it looks like some kind of invasion of some kind. Someone drops something. And, yeah, lots of humor and probably homage-y type things ensue. Start with John. John, what do you think of the trailer for The World's End?
I would say, as one of the few people who probably isn't quite as in the tank for the movies you kind of referenced that are leading up to this one, Hot Fuzz and whatnot, I think this one holds a lot more promise to me. I thought, essentially, this is the kind of trailer where you're just like, after you watch it, you're just like, WTF just happened, you know? You're just like, huh? Because it's just, yeah, like you said, it just kind of starts off and it's like, all right, let's just be a nice, everybody's getting back together for one more pint type of story. Let's see where all our lives went type of deal. And said, oh, wait, now there's like crazy alien eye things going on. And but then there was also like some like crazy burlesque dancing part. And like, I don't know, like, I don't even know. I feel like you could tell me anything would happen in this movie, and I'd be like, all right, yeah, that probably. Like, after seeing that trailer, it just looks like Edgar Wright's going to go all over the place with it.
You're a big Scott Pilgrim fan, too, though.
Right, that's the thing, is I love Pilgrim. So it's probably, like, ridiculous of me to be like, I like Edgar Wright when he directs America. No. Except Scott Pilgrim's Canadian. No.
North America.
North America. No. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely vibing on the trailer. It just looks like almost like a out of control slapstick crazy time.
All right, Laramie.
Yeah, I am in the tank for both Pegg and Frost, and I interviewed Simon Pegg on Friday, and I didn't ask him about this. I just wanted to be as name droppy as Aaron. So, but I did notice in my research that he said he was best friends with Nick Frost, which I found very interesting. Like, I don't know if I still have best friends, or I call it that, or how often do you talk to your best friend? I had all kinds of questions about that, too, but they only gave me 15 minutes, so I had to bail on that and just ask Sulu and Scotty questions, unfortunately. Okay. So, I like this trailer, yeah. I mean, I like both the preceding films as well, so it's not really a surprise that I would dig this. I think these guys, when they get together, are really funny, and thank God it's not Paul, too, because Paul was terrible. And it actually looks like Neighborhood Watch quite a bit to me, but no one saw Neighborhood Watch, so we should be fine.
Oh, The Watch.
Yeah, The Watch, sorry. Yeah. Yeah,
I love the Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg written features. I'm a huge fan of Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, and I love the chemistry between Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, and just Edgar Wright in general. I can't wait to see films that he's done. I was surprised how almost under wraps kind of the premises. Like, Shaun of the Dead, you knew it was a zombie movie, and Hot Fuzz, you knew it was an action movie. This one, it obviously gives you the idea that something crazy is going on, and it most likely looks like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers type deal, or, you know, something of that nature, but it doesn't seem like it's overtly playing up what that twist actually is, as opposed to the other movies. So, I'm both excited because, hey, it's another one of these, it mixed with intrigued because I don't know what to expect necessarily yet. So,
I'm really looking forward to that Franco, what's it called, At the End of the World? Or
This is the End?
This is the End. I'm really looking forward to that. Like, that looks really funny.
Yeah, every time I see new stuff from it, and I'm not trying to, but they keep showing it to me, I'm like, yeah, all right. And what I know about that one, because I was at a WonderCon a few weeks ago, they had a panel there, they talk about how much they plan on ripping into each other's careers. Like, they're very much going to play up the fact that they're playing themselves, and the script is very improvisationally heavy in terms of, like, just go after each other. So that gets me really excited for that movie.
I enjoy that action.
Yeah, but yeah. So The World's End comes out in August 23rd. This is the End, I believe, comes out in June, like middle of June. So.
And we shouldn't be worried that every filmmaker is not making things about the end of the world. I'm sure that's fine.
After Earth.
Welcome to Earth.
You already made it past the Mayan calendar. It's all good.
Every day is a bonus. Just like after Sarah Connor prevented Judgment Day. That's the motto, I believe. Every day is a bonus. So yeah, let's move on from my timely T2 references and into our movie review for The Great Gatsby.
I will tell you God's truth. God's truth about myself. I am the son of some very wealthy people. Sadly, they're all dead now. I lived in all the capitals of Europe, collecting jewels, hunting big game, painting a little. Then came the war, old sport. Every allied government gave me a decoration.
Major J. Gatsby for Valor Extraordinary.
That's right. Could it all be true?
Gatsby. He had an extraordinary sense of hope, but I had the uneasy feeling that he was guarding secrets. Milk tears,
I did this for you. Gatsby, I'd like to know who he is and what he does.
Gatsby? What Gatsby?
My boss!
Mr. Carraway, this is my good friend, Mr. Maya Wolfshot.
I understand you're looking for a business connection.
Happens to be confidential. You understand?
Okay, so that should have been some of the trailer for The Great Gatsby. This is the new film from director Baz Luhrmann, who's adapted the story, of course, from the novel The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. It stars Leonardo DiCaprio as Jay Gatsby, a man who throws lavish parties but is shrouded in mysteries involving his origins. We soon find out those origins as we learn more about other characters in the film, which include Tobey Maguire as Nick Carraway, a seemingly normal guy who gets thrust into this world of lavish parties as he reignites a relationship with his cousin, played by Carey Mulligan. They become friends again, and they start hanging out, and then they start hanging out with Gatsby, and lots of romantic drama eventually ensues as we learn more about Gatsby and Daisy, the Carey Mulligan character, along with many others in this film. Let's start with Laramie. Laramie, what did you think of The Great Gatsby?
I don't know if I'm going to be the outlier here, but I wrote a review for Laramie.com, which I was able to somehow get. No one had that yet. for Great Gatsby, which I gave it an A-. I really liked Great Gatsby, and I think it's because of my relationship with the book. And the one thing people have said to me is that the characters are undeveloped and it's a cheesy love story, and to which I have agreed, because I think that's kind of what the book had as well. I think it had surface-level characters. It's a really short book. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but you can read that in an afternoon pretty easily. And so, yeah, to me, it captured the spirit of the book really well, the decadence. And the larger point was about the money and the era and the new money and the old money and the just kind of the weirdness before the Great Depression. So to me, I really liked it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. So.
John?
I'm a huge Luhrmann guy. I even tried to defend Australia to people.
Okay, that's unacceptable. Beyond the pale.
But anyway, I'm glad Baz is back to doing bombast and taking over one of my favorite books ever. I just thought that like this is the greatest, you know, synthesis of like high literature and like ridiculous pop culture. It's actually gotten better to me as I've stepped away from it for a few days, and I just think and it's a compliment from me. It might be a backhanded or diss from others, but I just thought it, to me, it's just like a perfect, like, 2-hour music video that has a little bit more substance to it. The performances don't as, I will admit that my enjoyment out of it is because I already do like the source material. And then the other best part to me is just how it's shot, how beautiful of a film it is. And I might get into a little later, but also just how the music's used in this movie, I think, is better than almost anything out there before it. So I definitely – when I initially came out, I was like 4 out of 5 probably, but maybe that's just being nice. But now I might elevate it to even a 4.5 just because I continue to kind of think about that world that I was transported to that Baz put out there.
Will John still love me when I I like that song.
It's a good song. I love the soundtrack for this movie, and I'm happy to be positive about this movie. I'll say you guys give it 2 A's. I'm giving it a B, but I did enjoy the movie. And what's weird is I had like trouble trying to like decipher my thoughts on the movie after coming out of it. Like I knew I wasn't blown away by it, but I certainly really enjoyed it for the most part, but I couldn't pinpoint my issue with it. And I think it's because I'm not in love with the text. I think that's where it comes down to. I'm not in love with The Great Gatsby, the source material. And I feel like it's representative of how the film plays out for me. Like the first hour, I'm all on board. I love Baz's style here. I love how it melds with the story and what you're, you know, supposed to be seeing. This is the 20s and you're seeing the lavish, the extravagance that Gatsby's putting forth along with just that time in general. And it works really well. And then you get into, you know, the romantic plot that happens in the second half of the film, and it reflects both the text and the film that it's, you know, I don't really enjoy the female characters here. For what, Myrtle's just kind of tossed in. Isla Fisher, she just comes in as Myrtle, just doesn't get much to do. And then, you know, Daisy, who's obviously the bigger female role in here, she's so fickle and irritating to me that it's hard for me to get on board with that story.
That was one of the, and the big cut, I'd say, from the book over is that they don't do as much with Jordan.
Exactly. And that's something I'd really praise too, actually, because of, I don't know this Elizabeth Debicki person, but this is like her second film or something, but every time she was on screen, I really enjoyed her. Like I liked her presence and she didn't have much to do. So, I mean, if they could have pulled more of that, more of her character back into the story, maybe could have balanced it out better to me. I'm not sure. But, I mean, getting back to the review in a nutshell, I think DiCaprio's great in this movie. I think he makes a great Gatsby. He plays up kind of his movie star image in a way.
Wait, he makes a great Gatsby, huh?
Yeah, you see what I did there? You see what I tried to subtly work that in while sounding very excited about it. He makes a great Gatsby.
Did you write it in pen?
a feathered pen. But I think he's very good in this film. I think he captures what Gatsby needs to be. At the same time, Tobey Maguire is both ideally cast but still kind of boring. Like, I think Tobey Maguire, when he's not...
He's the perfect Nick Carraway.
He's the perfect Nick Carraway because Nick Carraway is a very boring character. So it's like, you found Tobey Maguire. Great for you. Like, that's perfect casting. That doesn't make the character any more interesting because he already is inherently not that interesting, at least in... For me, anyway, and at least in the way this film presents him, he's just kind of like, oh, he looks, you know, he gives guffaw looks every now and then and reacts to things while narrating a lot. And Joel Edgerton, he's very much playing the mustached villain in this movie and doesn't really broaden the character much, but the text doesn't really do so much either. So it's a mix of, I really like the style. This is certainly the most entertaining version of Gatsby that I've seen compared to the other version, like the 70s version specifically, like Redford. Like that movie's just like, hey, we showed up and did this, but I certainly enjoyed the movie. It just didn't completely pull me in, I guess, because of the, I don't know.
I guess one of the reasons that I like this movie or the movie's grown on me is that I guess a lot of the reasons I like this movie are like are about direction and about how it's presented. I mean, like you said, I'll be the first to admit that the first half is kind of the riveting part because it's just, let's show off every bell and whistle we've got as far as the FX. And then the other part, I think, is just, I would recommend people listen to the soundtrack a few times before they go into it, because that actually colored my enjoyment of it a lot, because it's so interestingly mixed, as we talked about at the beginning of the show. They use a lot of contemporary music, and it's a lot of contemporary, like, hip-hop that mixes, like, 1920s jazz samples. And so they can kind of, like, pull and push in and out. And, like, I just think Baz uses a lot of that fun kind of contradictions. Here's what's new. It's still kind of old type of thing, really, to a really good effect.
The one ding is, as much as I love that Lana Del Rey song, they go to it maybe one too many times as a little musical interlude theme kind of thing over the top of some dialogue. Yeah. Like when she's actually singing, it's pretty great, but they hit it about 4 times in a row in the next scenes, and it's like, I get what you're doing, but because like Little Miss Sunshine did this as well with You Already Know How This Will End, but yeah. It's like just one too many times. It's a little too sweet. So
you're,
you're saying you'd like a little bit more jazz trumpet on the scaffold.
That's what I was going to.
I want more Andre 3000 and Beyonce just crushing it.
I feel like it does, like that's, it does kind of hit the, and that's, you know, inherent with kind of Baz's style. It very much, it hits some of the same points repeatedly. Like it, like the, it goes back to Carraway's narration so much of things that like I can see on screen and it's happening, and it hits a lot of music beats the same, and it hits some of the, just the way he goes back to certain, it does, like it feels like it's long when it doesn't need to be. Like it could be.
The thing you have to give Lerman is he is putting the movie out he wants to put out every time. Like his decisions are deliberate and they're very Lerman-ish, and that's what he's doing. You know, he's an auteur because you know what his films look like and you know it's a film even if you don't know he directed it.
Well, that's kind of the inherent problem I feel like when reviewing his movies is it's like it doesn't matter. I feel like what we say, you a lot of times I feel like it's. You, if you've seen Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge, you should see this movie. Like
you either buy into it or you don't. In other words,
right?
For sure. If you already like Lerman's style, then I can't. Like I don't know why you dislike. I'm surprised that this movie is getting the reviews that it has gotten because it's like, well, what movie did you expect to get out of this? Like,
well, and that might just show that critics aren't a huge fan, and we've blown it here by somehow not having somebody who was like. I don't like all the moving stuff, and it's out of control.
Well, a lot of people seem to feel this was an opportunity to show that they read The Great Gatsby, yes. And that they had to defend it. But I don't think they got what The Great Gatsby was about. They may have read it, but I don't know that they remember it very well. But they did this. What was the other movie that critics came out and smashed because of an adaptation where they simply missed what the movie was about? I can't. Yeah, I mean, within the last year or so, I'll try and remember as we go. Okay. But it's a weird thing that people try and honor the source material. If A, you shouldn't in a movie. It's a movie. You're supposed to see the movie as its own if you can, right? But B, where you can't get away from the source material because it's so huge in a society like this.
Hunger Games or the Twilight movies? One of those, maybe?
No. Well, Twilight got dinged for being too close to the source material. I actually agree with that ding. But, Gatsby, like, to me, was always a surface-level novel. It was always about the time and not the people. And so to come out and say, well, he didn't do the, you know, love story justice or whatever, it's like, what are we doing here? I mean, who are you defending? Like, F. Scott Fitzgerald, he's fine.
What's neat is Lerman's very, besides a few omissions, he's very much playing the exact novel on screen. He's adding a style to it, but it's a very devoted adaptation to the book. And what's neat is, and you just kind of described this, that book, given that, like, we're in a society where we have blockbuster movies now, that book is, it's less of Fitzgerald's maybe his greater work and more of just, like, his version of a blockbuster of his kind of writing.
Oh, and, I know when it sort of happened was, and you can not like this movie, it's fine, incredibly loud and extremely loud and incredibly close, but where their review came down was pro 9/11, which... is about the least controversial stance you can take. You know what I mean? Or pro, like, the victims of 9/11 and anti-terrorism. It's like, well, yeah, de facto, everyone is for the things you're talking about, but that has nothing to do with the movie. Like, talk about the quality of the movie, what it made you feel, blah, blah, blah. But people seem to take these things to, like, pontificate on other subjects, which to me is kind of silly, a little ridiculous. Anyway, rant over.
But, yeah, I mean, Gatsby, that book is, like, It's like a blockbuster of its time in terms of the story that it's telling. It's not about something deeper. It's more about, hey, this is what's going on right now with these 20s, and here's a romantic plot to put on top of it. And this movie, what's neat is it's coming out in the middle of the summer. It's coming out at the beginning of the summer, and it feels like a blockbuster film that just happens to be a romance character drama. It's an interesting form of counter-programming. Like, instead of being, you know, another Iron Man or another Star Trek, which we have... you know, sandwiched around this movie, we have a spectacle film for sure, but one that's focused on Leonardo DiCaprio trying to get with some girl that he was with before World War I.
Yeah, it's kind of the movie version of You So Crazy, like that. I mean, so
I think that's Tyler Perry Presents You So Crazy.
Which I saw Peoples. That's what I forgot to mention.
He saw Peoples.
I went and saw Peoples. I was the only person in the theater for Peoples.
You're the only people in the people?
I was the one. I was the chosen. I'm the only person who, in Seattle, I can guarantee you, who saw Peoples on Thursday night at 10 p.m. because it was the only place it was showing.
How was Meet the Black Parents? How was that?
I reviewed it for film.com. Surprisingly, not terrible. And I don't know if this is an expectations thing. It's like you go in thinking, oh, I'm just doomed. I gave it, I think a 6.5 out of 10, which equates to like a C+ in the grading scale over there. Oh. And I gave it a fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, it could have been way worse. I mean, it had all these terrible romantic comedy tropes, but in between those were well acted, funny lines. I laughed, and I'm by myself and I laughed like a dozen times. Yeah, like Kerry Washington and Craig Robinson are both so likable that you're like, yeah, I'll go along with this. This kind of works. So, and I heard it got like did make zero money and got savaged by critics. And I hate critics. Whatever. I'm a critic and I hate them.
You wrote the book.
I wrote the book called Film Critic, and I still have real problems with critics. Yeah, People's got a 38%, which is ridiculous. Like. There's so many movies that are so much worse than this. Maybe they're just missing them. Maybe they're not going to movie 43 or a Scary Movie 5. You know, they're just not seeing the actual bad movies in the world.
Getting back to Gatsby.
Yeah.
What else we got? Who saw it in 3D? Everyone seen it in 3D? I know.
I think you had to, right?
I
actually was bummed out. I didn't see it in 3D. I realized that it wasn't going to be a 3D showing, but I went with a giant group of friends on a Thursday night screen, and it was like, oh, it's not in 3D. So I've heard it's good in 3D. I don't know what you guys thought.
I hate 3D as a concept. Like, I don't think they did anything special with the 3D here. Do you?
I will say. Because it was shot in 3D and the way Baz's style works where the movie practically looks 3D without being in 3D, like if they re-released, I would not be surprised if they re-released Moulin Rouge in 3D at this point, but it's like, well,
yeah, like
sorry.
Moulin Rouge felt like it was in 3D.
Like that, and that's what I'm saying. That movie's already coming at you. This movie, it's there and it's certainly like, it wasn't unnoticeable. I will say that. Like, it's not like Iron Man 3 where it's just terrible or it actually hinders the movie in some spots because of how dark that movie is and like, oh yeah, by the way, here's some screen doors to put in your face. But like, this movie, It works in the same way that like you're already having like a CG realized New York City. It's just kind of part of it for me. It's not something that took away from it. It's not something that distracted me. It's just something that seems like a part of the movie. That's
one thing that probably hurt me with it was the fact that they had to restart my movie three times because of the 3D. And it's like, why are you doing this? We started half an hour late and it didn't work the first two times. And it's just like, why are we going an extra mile to make the experience worse for people, you know, and charging them more for it? That's the only thing. I just, as a medium, I don't think 3D is great, but I will say I agree with you that the 3D was done well, you know, against context here.
I mean, I'm a person that loves 3D for Hugo and Avatar and Life of Pi. I think those are the best examples of
Life of Pi. Sure. I was curious because I thought another auteur, if you will, or somebody who's got good street cred. Mm-hmm. It was Sam Raimi, and I thought Wizard of Oz was, especially because I saw Life of Pi and Wizard of Oz in like the last two 3D movies I saw, and I was thinking to be like, oh man, maybe we're figuring 3D out, and that's why I was kind of bummed I didn't see this one in 3D, because I wondered, and especially not seeing it, I could tell moments where probably 3D was happening.
But he has a lot of those shots that like dive bomb into the city, and I'm like, all right, that's I'm on Star Tours now apparently, but that's great. Like that's, but yeah, I mean it didn't disservice my. But Larrabee, I think it's commendable for the movie that you still gave it like an A- after like waiting another half hour for it to start in a format that you don't like, and it's a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so. And I thought Carey Mulligan, though, I think you both touched on the character being a little disappointing and capricious, like women are. No, I say that as a happily married man, of course. I thought she was perfect for the part. You know,
I thought casting that hit a jackpot with her. When she was casted for that, I thought she was perfect for Daisy, and I still do.
Yeah, and they had quite the running for that particular part. I mean, it's such an iconic part that there were huge name actresses out there really vying for it. And I thought she was great because she did the vulnerable stuff really well. She did the flighty stuff really well. She did, you know, all the things that you needed to kind of, in a short period of time, vacillate such a big range. I thought she did really well with that.
My little shack's just a cardboard box at 80 a month.
Your life is adorable.
I know somebody in West Air.
I don't know a single person that side of the bay.
Oh, you must know Gatsby.
Gatsby? What Gatsby?
And did you guys know the DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire backstory, which I had no idea about until after?
You mean like, that they're best bros? They're bros.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
They both do a charity work together, don't they?
Like, they've been friends since they were like 8 or something. Like, that blew my mind. So, again, that kind of makes sense casting-wise because Gatsby is DiCaprio in a sense that he's just this larger-than-life iconic star. Meanwhile, Maguire has been always doing smaller things and can never quite get out of that shadow, you know, of his best friend, let's say. So that's strange.
He was Spider-Man. I mean,
yeah, but
got a billion-dollar franchise.
He was singing, he was singing and dancing. I mean, come on.
I love that part of within Spider-Man 2 when he has that umbrella and he's jumping back and forth on the sidewalk.
Just ridiculous.
The reason I like Gatsby a lot, and I thought that this illustration enhance that is because I'm a big fan of like sad decadence and I just think
I am too, yeah.
I just love and it's and when it's like colored in this manner, it's so great to just like there's just it bringing up a lot of fun but being like, man, this just doesn't like feel right either. Like, it's fun.
I think DeBicki has that great line as Jordan, which I was probably right out of the book, where she says, you know, I love parties, they're so intimate. I hate small gatherings, they're so non-intimate. No, but yes, I've only said you can't get any privacy.
Yeah.
Really, once? No.
I was texting back and forth with a friend who had seen Gatsby last night. And I was saying, like, one of the lines I use in my review is, I like Joe Black. And I think, like, if you don't like Joe Black, you probably won't like this. Because to me, I like that, like, opulent, desperate yearning. Like, I think that's a cool theme that it's not done very often. And so, you know, you could make that into a negative, too. You could be like, well, that's very silly, the rich people problems. But to me, like, it really worked in Joe Black, and it worked here, so.
Yeah, I would say, looking back, though, I definitely bought into the over-the-top romance of some of his past movies a little bit more. It was kind of like, to me, the book is much more subtle and kind of like casual about things. And this one definitely kind of tried to illustrate through song, through flashbacks, whatever, have you like some level of like almost, you know, Capulets versus the Montagues extreme kind of feel to it. And maybe that part didn't quite work as well.
I will say that I just watched Moulin Rouge for the first time this week. I had never seen it before. And I watched it a day before I saw Gatsby. And maybe that could have contributed to why I wasn't as huge on Gatsby as I wish I would have. I really wanted to like this movie quite a bit, but I just, you know, had some kind of things that took away from it. But maybe that could have contributed because I think Moulin Rouge, I was surprised how like into that movie I was. I was really engaged by everything going on in it. It was just like,
Did you Google consumption at one point during that? Because I know I did.
I know what consumption is.
Oh, you already knew. Wow, look at you.
Oh, history major. Tuberculosis. I was really taken aback by how much I enjoy Moulin Rouge. And maybe that was like, well, that movie was so like, and then this movie, Lerman's almost being somewhat restrained in his style, even though he's still fitting exactly what I expected of a Baz Luhrmann joint set in the 1920s.
I thought it was fun. We talk about what, you know, some of the limitations of, you know, maybe cutting some corners from the book or something. I thought one of the good things he did was all sorts of little subtle shots at like 1920s New York life. There's one scene in particular that I think got a pretty good chuckle and kind of a nice job, Boz, is they're going down a bridge. And they go by a car and like Jay-Z is playing and it's a bunch of African Americans like dancing on a truck.
And then they go by
and like it's a old curmudgeon-y like white guy driving them and there's all sorts of little subtle shots like that are kind of interesting that Boz decided to kind of include in there.
And clearly the have not thing is pretty big now. I mean, it's something our culture is facing pretty heavily at this point, the disparate wealth levels. And there it was kind of obvious too. I mean, you had the bad part of town, quote unquote, where basically the rich people went and trolled to exploit people, you know, and And then you've got the parties that, well, I mean, come on, they're also getting affairs with it too. And then you've got these giant parties, but then there's a difference between new money and old money, you know, and I don't think that's quite the case anymore, but there's certainly a difference between CEO money and everybody else, you know, so I thought that was interesting.
Cool. Also, that little kid that plays young Leo DiCaprio, pretty good. Spitting image, I would say. I was thrown aback by, I was like, wait, is that DiCaprio? Did they de-age him?
I was going to say, so many movies that I've just like tried to CGI the old actor onto his young self. I was glad they actually cast different people.
I was like, did they Benjamin Button this or what? Like, but between this and like young Brad Pitt and Moneyball, I was like, wow, they're doing a good job of getting young people to play these actors. But, all right. Any other thoughts on Gatsby before we wrap up the old review here?
No.
I think I'm good.
Yeah. All right, then let's get to our rating. Each week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we try to rate films based on when you should go and see them, and we have a scale that goes from IMAX to theater to dollar theater, Netflix, HBO TV, or just kind of forget about it. How did I start? Laramie, where on that scale would you put The Great Gatsby?
Yeah, I'd say see it in IMAX. It's such a big film that it's probably you're probably going to do it a disservice seeing it at home or on a little laptop screen. So I'd see it in the theater, yeah.
John?
Maybe the IMAX rating, but probably a very enthusiastic see it in theater instead.
Awesome. Yeah, I would say theater as well, especially if you like Gatsby and you like Baz Luhrmann, then these two things go together like things that go together. So there you go. good combination, and I would recommend it. If you have some kind of aversion to contemporary music in a period film, then
you're screwed.
Then you're going to be like, oh, what did I get into? Why did I not pay attention to any of the marketing for this movie? But
yeah. go like that, you know, go $1 copy of an old Baz film, and if you like that one, then go see this one.
Yeah, watch like 5 minutes of Australia, and then be like, all right, I can, yeah, all right, and then go.
Well, even the trailers here are totally expository and tell you exactly what the film is. So.
Yeah, yes. All right, let's move on to movie callback, where we discuss a couple films that relate in some way to the main feature of the week. There are some obvious ones, I feel, here already, but I will begin. Les Miserables came to mind, the most recent Les Miserables, just in terms of, hey, here's a big adaptation of a classic thing. Here it is on screen. And then yeah, other Luhrmann films in Australia actually did come to mind, because that's a movie I also kind of enjoyed like the first 45 minutes of it quite a bit, because it was just over-the-top Luhrmann style, and then it was like, hey, now there's all this other stuff going on.
I didn't even think it was that much of a Luhrmann movie. I thought... That's the most just like him doing.
You watch like the first hour of Australia, and you see like Nicole Kidman making like giant wide eyes at like cows running at her. It's like, well, this is over the top. John, any movies come to mind?
Just in general,
that relate to Gatsby that you thought of involving Gatsby in some way?
Gosh, I don't know. Like obviously the Baz ones, but. I think Wizard of Oz was this year's Wizard is kind of a contemporary in what it attempts to do in creating a world. I think with all the technology and stuff that those two movies have kind of done a good job of creating some sort of, you know, colorful, like you said, it was a fake New York, fake Oz, obviously. So, yeah, but on the one hand, you know, was it any good or not? I still don't know if I like Wizard of Oz or not.
Oz the Great and Powerful.
I know. I should say the actual title, shouldn't I?
You know, we didn't emphasize Great Gatsby's production values enough, I don't think. That movie looks amazing. Like, there's no question about this. That movie, like, the lavishness, the fabric budget, it looks amazing. It's a fantastic looking movie.
Yep.
Laramie, any movies come to mind?
What I called it, and I'm ready for this segment because I wrote this in my review. Eyes Wide Shut meets The Talented Mr. Ripley meets Great Expectations.
Boom, boom.
You know, you've got the unrequited aspect. You've got the guy pretending to be someone he's not. And you've got this weird kind of sexual tension throughout in these huge, opulent settings. So besides Meet Joe Black, I would throw out those three films.
Those are good. That's a good call. I like that meeting.
I just sat around and thought about that for a long time.
Nice. All right, that was a movie callback. Let's get to box office results. Each week we try to go over the box office totals and find out if our previous predictions were anywhere close to what actually happened. Last week on the show, Brandon predicted Gatsby would get second place at 35. Jermaine, Lucier predicted second place of $38 million. I went the highest and said second place of $41 million. Not even I could, I win though, cause I was under, but not even I could match the results for Gatsby, which came in second place with $51 million. And, Laramie, you got any words on the box office this week?
Yeah, I mean, Gatsby clearly overperformed. They're saying that budget comes in at $105 million. I think that's based on quite a lot of tax subsidies and rebates from
filming in Australia.
Yeah, exactly. So $105 million is a delicious budget for them, given they should do, you know, if you do $50 million to start with, you can basically make that $150 million domestic. And then internationally, I think it'll play great internationally. You know, big spectacle films should do at least a 2-to-1 multiplier overseas, I want to say. And you look, I mean, this is basically a Bollywood film on some levels, right? So I think it'll play overseas, and I think they've got to be really happy with the result. And Iron Man 3 fell about what everyone expected. It was between Iron Man 1 and 2. 2 fell more, not as good a film. 1 fell less because it was kind of a novelty. And, I mean, obviously they're going to make $1 billion there and be very happy. Peoples did terribly, and I don't know why that was the case, but. Maybe lack of marketing.
Yeah, people don't love David Alan Grier as much as they love Pat Joel Edgerton in supporting roles, I guess.
So, who knew?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It was good box office vindication, I think, for...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, it's...
I mean, people... I feel like you kind of forget that, like, especially, like, the, you know, what, the 25 to 35 set right now, like... We all grew up with some of those earlier films we kind of talked about and have kind of like, I think like much like, Wes Anderson or a few of those other guys, it's like, we're going to go see them. If it looks very Bozzy, we're going to go see it. And I think that they kind of underestimated, I think they underestimated that sect of people that will go see that wanted badly to see this movie and was one of their more look forward to movies. And then
everyone's read Gatsby too, like they're all from, I mean, for the most peaking on a general level, everyone's familiar with that story to an extent. Like, it's a familiar property going in with complete with, you know, a DiCaprio and
but types. I mean, if you look at Baz Luhrmann openings, they're really, really slight. Australia opened at 14 million, Mulan opened around 11 once it got wide, Romeo 11 as well. So this is, for him, it's a fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge win. But, I mean, you're also putting on DiCaprio, putting on Tobey Maguire to an extent. I mean, it's coming out in the middle of the summer. It looks...
Well, it was plagued by kind of like a weird aura of negativity. Like, yeah, it got bumped. It was supposed to come out a long time ago. They bumped it here, and it's like, oh, did they do that because it's falling apart? And then, you know, like you said, the reviewers have pretty much at least kind of been muted or, you know, said, just that... There's not a lot of like critical buzz, so it's like all basically just people who, I feel like the buzz and the positive vibes going into it were only the people who
wanted to go
really
see
wanted
it.
To see it, and apparently there were a lot of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm certainly not downplaying that it's a surprise. It is a surprise, especially for like a second week summer movie, because you know that generally doesn't do well. Like it's, you always have your first movie of the summer that like opens huge, and then that next movie comes out, and you're like, hey, that's around, and so it's. It's very rare that something like this would bump to that high. Like, I think the last one to do it maybe was, like, Star Trek back in 2009, right? Like, in terms of that second week summer movie. Like, what else happened? Like,
for comparison's sake, Australia did 50 domestic, 161 international. Jeez. So I don't think they are out of bounds hoping for that result this time.
Cool. All right, let's move on. It's that time. It's time for some games. All of that. That's the improv theme for games, of course. And I have a game this week for you guys to participate in. It is one of my favorite games, WMMD, Which Made More Dough. This is the game where I put two movies against each other, and you have to determine which of those movies made more money at the box office. So Laramie, get off Box Office Mojo right now, because we're going to play this game.
I'm off. Is it domestic or international or worldwide?
It's just domestic.
Just domestic, okay.
Just domestic, non-adjusted for inflation.
Cool.
Okay, so the theme for this week's WMMDs is... Summer dramas. These are dramatic films that came out during the summer. Any summer. So here we go. Here's the first one. And both of you just respond which one you think made more dough. And I'll...
You're supposed to make a
no, 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 no numbers. No numbers. Just one. Okay, whatever you want. Okay, here we go. Here's the first one. A League of Their Own or Road to Perdition?
A League of Their Own.
I think you got. I've got to believe that it wasn't a slow gainer, and it came out hot. League of Their Own.
The League of Their Own made 107. Road to Perdition made 104. League of Their Own.
Yeah. Wow, it's amazing that both those movies made so much on their first weekend, though.
Not first weekend. It's totals overall.
Yeah, they were fine. Yeah, there were long bleeds on all of them, I bet.
Yeah.
No, edit out my stupidity.
No. Yeah. Both Tom Hanks movies, separated by almost 10 years, I think. Maybe exactly 10 years.
Road to Perdition was such a pretty movie.
Yeah. I love that one.
Yeah. Love that Jude Law in that movie. So creepy. Here we go. Here's the next one. The Perfect Storm or Apollo 13.
Gotta go Apollo 13 here, I think.
I think I'm gonna... Oh, man. I'm going to go Perfect Storm.
The Perfect Storm made 182. Apollo 13 made 173.
Oh,
man.
Be crushed into that one.
I remember that. The only thing I remember is,
much like the wave crushed that boat.
The only thing I remember was Perfect Storm doing way better than I ever thought it would do, and I think that's why I went with it.
The only thing I remember is
the trailer with a giant wave, isn't there? Like,
the only thing I remember is Mary Elizabeth Monstrato being, the storms have collided! That's not what makes sense. Let's see, what else do I got? This next one, Public Enemies or Unforgiven?
This is hard.
Public Enemies?
Public Enemies didn't make squat, as I recall, so I'm going to go Unforgiven, even though inflation's going to kill me on this.
There's no inflation, it's all...
I know, that's what I mean, like, I could use inflation.
Oh, you could use inflation.
I'll take Unforgiven.
John?
Oh, I said Public Enemies.
I don't feel great about it, though.
Okay. Public Enemies made 97 mil. Unforgiven made 101 mil.
Yay! 3-3!
I was an unconfident Public Enemies. I'm just trying to be combative so somebody wins.
It's work.
It helps.
I don't like ties.
I'm curious what
you're not first, you're last. I mean,
Robin's racing.
Let's see. Public Enemies, by the way, worldwide, 214. Made more foreign. Public Enemy. I guess that debt factor. The depper does it for people. And Christian Bale going, I gotta get that guy. I think that's what he did. I haven't seen it since theaters. Let's see, here's the next one. Field of Dreams or Open Range, Kevin Costner edition.
That's gotta be Field of Dreams.
Yeah, Field of Dreams.
Even though it feels like a trick question, but
Field of Dreams made 64 mil, Open Range made 58 mil.
Thank God.
Here's the next one. Empowered Women edition. Thelma and Louise versus G.I. Jane.
I'm going to go G.I. Jane because it's a bigger summer movie.
Yeah, I think G.I. Jane.
Thelma could have been a slow roller with all its acclaim. Thelma and Louise made 45. G.I. Jane made 48.
I'm crushing this segment.
Here's the next one. Lou Diamond Phillips edition. Courage Under Fire versus La Bamba.
Because it's domestic, I'll go Courage Under Fire.
For fun, I'll go La Bamba.
Courage Under Fire made 59 mil. La Bamba made 54 mil.
Dang it.
I cannot
Anytime
lose.
Anytime I go again, you just don't go against Laramie in this game.
Necesito, the Puerta de Glacio.
I've done it like 8 years of box office predictions, but I've looked up a lot of these movies in my life.
I've done at least 3 minutes of box office. So
I very much chose this game on purpose. I'm curious to see if the amateur versus the expert can do this. Here we go. Cooper condition. Full Metal Jacket versus Eyes Wide Shut.
Full Metal Jacket.
I think you're right. I think Eyes Wide Shut, I mean, it didn't do well at all. So I'll go Full Metal Jacket as well.
Full Metal Jacket made 46 mil. Eyes Wide Shut made 55 mil.
Oh, we went down.
I get the point on that one.
Inflation would have helped us quite a bit there, by the way.
Yeah, I'm aware.
About 25 years of inflation.
Eyes Wide Shut made 162 worldwide. Had a 2-1 worldwide going. So.
Yeah, you'll find that movies no one understands actually do better overseas because they don't – ESL is, you know, they don't care what it means. So.
2 hours, 40 minutes, by the way. People wanted to see Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise's butt in that movie, so they went for it, regardless if they understood what was going on. Here we go, next one. Contact or Phenomenon?
I think Phenomenon was a summer movie, and I think Contact was a winter movie.
No, they're both summer movies.
Oh, really?
I've chosen all these specifically. They're both summer
movies. I'm going Phenomenon. It's a slam dunk.
I mean, I'll go Contact. You're saying you're willing to die for this, which you believe in. I'll go Contact.
Yeah, Contact came out in July. July 11th. Let's see. Contact made 100. Phenomenon made 104.
Oh!
Devastating. Devastating.
70 mil on the foreign. Too heady. Too heady for them. On the,
yeah.
For a what's his name? Bob Zemeckis joint.
Curious what. On a 1-0 run.
Phenomenon. I can't spell phenomenon, apparently.
Streaky.
Trying to see what phenomenon did overseas, and I cannot spell the word. Hold on. What do we got here, phenomenon? If I could change the 152.
Inescapable that trailer was. John Travolta, nope. Doing stuff.
Here we go. The Notebook or The Horse Whisperer.
No.
Notebook.
Notebook.
Although Notebook didn't make as much as you think. None of the Sparks things do, but I'll take The Notebook.
Notebook still is like the highest one, I think, from Sparks.
Yeah.
It has to be, right? Because it's certainly not Safe Haven. Notebook made 81. How Horse Whisperer, featuring ScarJo, 75.
Boom. Yep, there back you go. On track.
Here's the last one. Sam Jackson edition. A Time to Kill versus Inglourious Bastards.
Bastards. Although it did much better internationally.
This one, just because we have to have another opportunity for me to gloat, I'll take Time to Kill.
Yes, I deserve to die, and I hope you burn in hell. It's 108 for Time to Kill versus 120, Bastards.
Yeah, what'd you get? That's what you get. You freaking come.
Problem is, I can't win. I can only win if I go different than him. So
better not miss. Better not miss.
Well, that was the last one. But John, you put up a commendable effort. Laramie, however, has won WMMDs this week.
Yay!
Nailed it. I like that game. That's a fun. I like playing that game. It's just so fun. That's games. Let's move on to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies that are coming out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Cloud Atlas comes out on Blu-ray and DVD. I like Cloud Atlas. Laramie, you like Cloud Atlas? Right?
I like parts of it, yeah.
Right. John, you have not seen. You want to read the book first, or you have?
I know. I actually own the book. It's on my. It's third in the queue for my book reading. It looks good, though.
Well, good. Yeah. Well, I certainly recommend it. Texas Chainsaw 3D comes out this week. I don't stop cheering so hard, guys. Okay, it's come on. It's just Texas Chainsaw. The movie. I did, Larry, you don't see the horrors, so I doubt you saw this movie. Texas Chainsaw. Is hilarious because the movie literally cannot do math. That's how it came out. The movie, it begins in the 70s, features a baby, and then takes place in current times where that baby has grown up to be a whopping 20 years old. It's amazing how that somehow managed to get by anybody, but it happened.
It's called movie magic.
That's what movie magic. But yeah, that happens too. So if you, you know, if you feel like punishing yourself, go for it. Let's see. What's going on now? Next week, we're going to talk about Star Trek Into Darkness. That's, you know, big Star Trek movie, big Star Trek sequel coming out.
I think people will see that.
Yeah, I think a few people.
Yeah.
Cumberbatch!
Benedict Timothy Carlton Cumberbatch. He's that British. He's in that movie. And let's do a little box office predicting what we think Star Trek Into Darkness is going to do next weekend. What did the first, you know this offhand, Laramie? What did that Star Trek?
I think it's 70-something.
Star Trek. And 75, yep. There we go.
Yeah. So I will take this one at 93. I like a sequel bump here of about 20%.
I assume that's first place. Very surprised.
Yeah, 93 will easily win. Yeah. Yeah.
John, any thoughts?
It's intriguing, like, the whole Iron Man 3 going gangbusters is kind of like, made me curious to see how this one does.
I think that's off Avengers, though. That's my theory there. I don't think that's off Iron Man 2.
Yeah, and the other problem is this has to compete against Gatsby and Iron Man 3, so it's harder to open giant when you're got a lot of competition going. I'll casually say, I'll say 101.
101.
Nice.
It's pretty casual.
Big number, though.
Yeah. I'm gonna go a little lower. I'm gonna give it a strong 83. let's say a strong 83 in the first place. Give it a nice 8 million bump, I guess. The natural bump for any big sequel.
They're getting the 3D dollars, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, yeah. They're getting those. Got to get them 3D bucks.
But... Feel epically
is it a conversion?
Confident.
What? Sorry?
Is it a conversion?
Yes, it is a conversion.
How are they allowed to do that? I went on a rant this week. We do a paper rant that usually has substance, but since my editor wasn't there, and I did my rant on 3D, because I don't know. I was like, I don't know whether I missed out by not seeing Gatsby in 3D or not. And it's like, we either need to like have everybody do as good a life as Life of Pi, or stop it.
I thought by rant you meant you were going to talk about who were the ad wizards that came up with that one, but you didn't go there, so it's all right. That's it. That's gonna do it this week, Brown Now Aaron and Abe. We've covered everything, guys. And so yeah, you can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written movie reviews, as well as at wysofblue.com, where you can find all my Blu-ray reviews, as well as my coverage for things I've done recently. The Newport Beach Film Festival happened, and I'm gonna cover the stuff that I saw at the Hero Complex Film Festival, so that's all gonna be there. You can also find me at twitter.com/Aaron's PS3. John?
You can, if you're interested in local Long Beach news, you can find me at gazettes.com. Otherwise, you can find me
Twitter. Yeah. You're on Twitter, are you? You're on the Twits.
I guess I am. I do random basketball and retweets, so that's pretty much it. Unlike these guys, I don't have much to sell, so I'll just yield the floor to you guys. You guys do your thing.
All right, Laramie?
Twitter, of course, .com, Laramie, LAREMY, also Laramie.com by the same spelling. If you want to sign up for a very funky newsletter, just Laramie.com/email. And I'm currently working on the sequel, The Film Critic, tentatively called Film Critic 2, The Contractually Obligated Sequel.
I thought it was going to be Film Critic Carter.
It was going to be Film Critic Empire Strikes Back until I realized they would just sue me into oblivion for that.
No. Or The Film Critic, The Critiking.
The critic who, the electric boogaloo critic.
Damn, I was about to say that.
Yeah.
Now I can't be witty.
Or like a prequel book, Film Critic, The Great and Powerful.
It would totally work.
It's all about Ebert.
Film Critic in 3D.
I will totally post-convert it. Don't think I won't.
I don't want you shooting it in 3D, don't you?
No, too expensive.
So you can find... Well, some of the episodes for now of Out Now for Internet on iTunes, we're getting that back. But you can find, they're all on my blog as well. And you can find most of the newest episodes at outnow.podomatic.com and some exclusive stuff. HHWLOD.com, you can find most of the, you can find our show there along with the other shows on that network. Out Now YouTube page, search Out Now. You can find just the review segments of the show there. outnowpodcast@gmail.com, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, twitter.com/outnow_podcast. You can follow, like, and email to all of those pages. Let us know what you thought of The Great Gatsby, the summer in general. We did actually just release our summer gamble episode. Myself, Abe, and many other friends of the show, Mark, Maxwell, and Alan, we predicted what we think will be the biggest hits of the summer. So that's up there right now, and that's a fun episode. And yeah, the contest I mentioned earlier, create us a banner. That'd be sweet. Favorite Star Trek character and why? Send us your answers. You could win prizes. It's very easy to win on the show. And lastly, iTunes reviews and ratings. It will help us to get back to our status quo. Where we like it, where we were happening, where we enjoyed it, if you give us a little hand on there. But John, Laramie, thank you for coming on to the show today.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks for having me.
Great. And stay tuned, guys. I believe Abe and I might be talking a little more about The Great Gatsby after the first break here. But until next time, so long and goodbye. Will you still love me when I'm no longer young?
Pretty face and let you
Hey, hey! That's my
hey.
That's my Krusty the Clown. Apparently, we're back.
You have to smoke like 50 more cigars first.
I do, but I can't. Anyway, we're back. This is more of us. Actually, it's more of me, and now Abe is joining me. Hey, Abe.
Hey, Aaron. What's going on?
Oh, you know, we just finished up talking about The Great Gatsby with Laramie and Jonathan, and that was fun. But now I've decided to lower my standards and talk to you about it.
Well, what can I say, man? $2 hookers is not what I'm all about, because that's illegal.
What a weird thing to say, but
yeah, it's
anyway.
Illegal.
Anyway, let's get to some Great Gatsby talk. I guess we can say that this will be more spoiler-heavy, although I don't know how much you can actually spoil of The Great Gatsby.
Not a whole lot, probably.
One of the most read books of all time. But
I started reading in, like, 10th grade English.
Yeah. But regardless, we'll get to your thoughts on The Great Gatsby, and then we'll just, you know, if we have anything more to add to that, we'll do so. So, hey, what did you think of Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby 3D?
I thought it was okay. Not great. I was actually kind of bored by it. But I thought the performances were strong, especially by Leo and also by Joel Edgerton. But, you know, it's something that I was never a huge fan of in high school in terms of the book and also even the Robert Redford movie. I think it's Robert Redford.
It's Robert Redford. That's a boring movie.
Yeah, and I remember like the part where like you know his mistress like punches the glass and just eats her hand with all of this blood on it. So I wasn't a huge like I wasn't super enthralled by it. I was actually kind of bummed out that I don't know if it didn't feel Baz Luhrmann-y enough for me, which is something strange to say.
I would say that and Adam Gentry, friend of the show, he kind of noted this as well. It's more restrained than you would expect from Baz Luhrmann, who
yeah, I guess that's kind of. Yeah, that's exactly, I guess, the way that you would characterize it, because, you know, you've seen his work before. It's kind of over the top, you know, very, you know, even in Romeo plus Juliet, where
equals something great. I think that's the
equals some kind of calculus. But when Tybalt, you know, John Leguizamo, like he goes down on his
equals
knees.
T equals us.
Thanks. I love that song.
I had to tie it together.
But, you know, Leguizamo's, like, rolling down his guns, and he's just, like, super slow-mo, fast-mo, and it's like, oh, wow, this is stylish, even in Moulin Rouge. But in this one, not a whole lot. In the 3D, I think that it wasn't fantastic in 3D. There were just a few scenes that were cool. But, yeah, it kind of felt as though it wasn't really it didn't have a huge touch of his style. But, you know... What did you guys?
I don't want to do too much repeating of the same points that I've already made for the listeners that are still in. But I will say that I mean I agree with you to an extent. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say I'm like a huge fan of it, not compared to John Laramie, but I enjoyed the film, and I would say that the first hour I thought was pure Luhrmann making the story really pop using his style, and then it does kick into the kind of romantic melodrama going on in the second, you know, half of the movie with these characters with Daisy and Gatsby. And it was less interesting to me, which is the same that I could say about the basic text. I'm also not a huge fan of the book. So the problems inherent with the story are already there in place. And because Luhrmann stuck very closely to the material, you know, it's the same kind of issues present themselves. That said, I mean, I do appreciate DiCaprio very much. I've already pointed out, the character Jordan, played by Elizabeth Debicki, I really liked her despite her limited role because she just kind of captured my attention every time I saw her.
Is she the really tall friend?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And
yeah, I just remember reading them in the book, and you know, I'm sure you guys have all discussed this in English class as well. The book is kind of like you know, the Roaring Twenties, and how it was all great, and there's like you know a huge, excess of alcoholism or partying or whatever have you. And it's just, yeah, I just never really liked these people. And I'm glad that there's a Nick Carraway to kind of agree with me in that sense of like, yeah, these guys are just super shallow and they're just really all about just living every day as if it's like, you know, one huge party. And yeah, I'm glad that Gatsby kind of, Gatsby did it for the wrong reasons, I feel.
Gatsby went the most over the top way possible to get what he wanted, and even then it didn't quite work out for him.
Yeah, Daisy was just like, oh yeah, I guess I'm just gonna be like what you had said. I'm gonna be super fickle and and pretend that I love you, but I don't love you. I also love my husband, who I have a daughter with. And it's like, well, yeah, I can't. I none of this holds any water for me. But yeah, the performances are good. I loved Leo, especially when he's wearing his white suit, comes over with all the roses, or I'm sorry, all the flowers, and then he just like runs away, and he's just like, what do I do? And I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, it's a funny guy.
It works. It works in showing the kind of different layers of Gatsby, of who this person is, what he wants to show you he is versus what he actually is. I think DiCaprio does know how to – I mean, he's Leonardo DiCaprio. He's a good actor. He knows how to capture that aspect to him. And, I mean, the rest of the cast, too. I mean, Carey Mulligan, as much as I don't have a fondness for the Daisy character, I think Carey Mulligan brings in what she needs to that role. I think she's a good actress in that part. It just – the part bothers me.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah. What's the tall friend's name?
Jordan.
Jordan.
Elizabeth Debicki is the name of the actress who's fairly new.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at first I almost thought when she was lying on the couch, I thought, oh, that's cool. They have Rooney Mara playing her friend. I was like, oh, wait, no, that person's way too tall to be Rooney Mara.
Rooney Mara got longer legs for this role.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, what won't she do?
That's what I imagine the WB exec is. He's like Mr. Slade at the Flintstones. Lerman, or Mr. Spacely in the Jetsons. Same character. Really. Lerman.
But I do like how they wrote the text on the screen, and I didn't fully hate the soundtrack the way that it went, but at the same time, I kind of thought...
I went home and bought it immediately. I love the soundtrack.
Yeah, I didn't hate it, but as the movie went on, I kind of was like, okay, I can get into this, because obviously they do play the... what's that CIA store with Ryan Reynolds and Denzel?
They play Church in the Wild.
Yeah, they play Church in the Wild, which is our... it only goes for...
I used to think it was only for safe, only for house. No one is safe, no one is house. But that's the tagline of the movie, I believe. But I think I love Gatsby's soundtrack so much that officially transferred my favor over for Gatsby as opposed to Safe House, because I can hardly remember Safe House in this movie.
I transferred it over to Gatsby because they actually use it in the film.
That helps too. Yeah. Well, no, it is in the end credits of Safe House, that song.
Is it? Well, it's not actually playing in the movie though.
No, it's not.
It could have,
but it fits in this movie.
It does, yeah. And, you know, all the other stuff, like, you know, they have Alicia Keys with, like, her melody of New York, you know, when they're going to the city, which is kind of very subtle. If you listen to it, you can hear it. They also have Big Pimpin'.
Izzo comes there. A lot of Jay-Z. I mean,
when
you're executive producer on the movie, you kind of have a say in those things.
But, I mean, I love the a cappella version of them and stuff like that. It's just... For some parts of it, I found it kind of jarring, and some of the party sequences just weren't lavish enough for me. And
really? I wouldn't say that. Oh my god, the party!
Like I was kind of half expecting, like, you know, the way that everything was going to go crazy, the way that it did in Moulin Rouge when they're singing. I actually almost thought, oh, this movie could use some more singing.
I mean, I said that it was restrained to an extent for Lerman, but I wouldn't apply that to the party scenes. I think the party scenes killed it. I think the fabric budget alone was ridiculous.
Oh, well, if you look at that, yeah, absolutely. But just in terms of...
No, I mean, there's giant fireworks going off everywhere, and people dance to the fool in the pool, and all the streamers. And Abe, do you know why this movie was a nightmare for me at some points?
Because you hate... shiny objects on the screen?
No, because of the massive amounts of glitter that were exploding out of the screen.
That's one of your fears?
We've talked to this before. What have we talked about before?
This is like an inside, but Aaron, I think you texted me during the Super Bowl when we saw the commercial about the guy getting shot in the face with a glitter bomb for the Coke commercial. You're like, glitter bombs.
It was a know everybody question once of what's the like ultimate weapon or whatever, and I'm like,
I know, and you're not being facetious either.
I'm not. God, you know how terrible glitter is.
You just can't get it out. I'm fully aware.
I bet I still have glitter on me from something like 5 years ago. That's like
Well, that means that you probably haven't showered in like a few years.
No, that's why glitter is terrible. It doesn't matter if you shower, Abe. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't come out of your clothes. That's probably for sure.
That's right.
Well, Gatsby. Glitter bombs, watch out.
It's
Right. If he had used glitter bombs, I'm pretty sure he would have gotten Daisy and they would have gotten away to Kentucky.
He could have distracted Jason Clark from shooting him.
Jason Clark, man, that guy continues to scare me. First, wait,
he's a little too sad sack for me in this movie.
And there's like only real two scenes with him, which is kind of a bummer because he's a pretty good actor. What's that one movie where he was with Shia LaBeouf?
Lawless. And
Lawless, yeah. Was that during this particular era too?
Because
they were during Prohibition,
actually, yeah,
right?
Prohibition, yeah. It was
so about 1918. Yeah, 1918. Except yeah, they're in like West Virginia or something like that.
Yeah, somewhere in the.
Yeah. Well, I guess he's playing dual roles as himself then. Well, he made it out. That's a good thing. Okay. Anyhow.
He's dead now. He didn't shoot himself.
So. Did the butler shoot him, or did he?
No,
yeah,
he shot himself. He clearly turned the gun on himself.
I saw that. poor Gatsby. Yeah. He should have worn that medal for Valor Extraordinary, and it probably would have blocked it. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's the most likely thing that would have happened. What,
hey, man.
What would you what rating would you give Gatsby?
I'd say HBO. It's not really for everybody, so I really wouldn't be like, oh yeah, you can just watch it in your queue. It's kind of just more like if it's on premium and you have access to premium cable, you could probably see it there.
Well, we had a pretty strong rating between three of us, but now you've dragged down the curve very.
Oh, did you guys all go theater?
Oh yeah, theater and IMAX.
Oh yeah, I listened to it, so I know.
But yeah, we're dragging down the curve now on Gatsby. But,
whew. Well, there has to be.
He won in the end, $50 million at the box office this weekend.
Oh, really?
Destroyed it.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
$50 million? Wow.
For second place, yeah, that's a lot.
Wait, what was first?
Do you want to think about that question, or want me to actually answer it?
I have to think about it for a second.
Iron Man was first place, Abe.
Oh, right. Yeah, I totally forgot. Tony Stark.
Tyler Perry's Peoples. That's what was first place.
Well, I was hoping that was going to be first because, I like Craig Robinson, especially in Haunted Time Machine. You should go see it. I'm talking to the audience members.
I figured. I saw you pointing at the screen.
How did you know I was pointing? I really was.
We're friends. Come on. What are you doing over there? Come on.
Awesome.
Any other thoughts? Are you looking forward to Star Trek Into Darkness?
Yeah, can I enter a late guess?
Sure.
I want to say I'm going to say first place with it's opening it's like a 6-day weekend, right?
It opens on Thursday.
Well, I guess Wednesday midnight, which is Thursday very early morning.
So it opens on Thursday.
I'm going to say for the 1, 2, 3, 4 day total, I'm going to say $160 million.
100 and what, 16?
60.
160 million.
160.
Wow, okay, you've lost already. Good job.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be like 70.
If it cracks 100, I'll be surprised, but we'll see.
Go big or go home, right?
Yes, you are home, so there you go.
Everyone loves Benedict Timothy Carlton Cumberbatch.
You nailed that one. That's,
boom.
That's a good place to end it, I think. So where can people find more of your work?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose.
Great. And episodes of our show on iTunes, slowly we'll be getting them back on there. But still, iTunes reviews and ratings will help us out. We're back at, back at square one. We want to get back to status quo. So support
us
there.
Thanks everyone who has written us a review in the past couple days here. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. But next week we'll talk about Star Trek Into Darkness. But until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
One, two, three, two, two, three. Love is blindness.
The knot is slipping. Love is blindness. Love is clockwork and it's cold steel. Fingers to numb the feel. Squeeze the handle. Blow out the candle.
That's my Kanye, Jay-Z.
That was excellent.